Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
The Broncos have made it to the desert, and so have we. Live from Arizona, here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Yeah, we're happy to be down here in Arizona. This is somebody pointed out, I said, they only play here once every 6 years. What am I thinking? There's four divisions, right, D-Mac? You dummy? So, yeah, they're only down here once every 8 years. Now, they're here every year in preseason, but who cares about that,
every
right?
Every year.
Right. Thanks for being sexy. It is impossible. So because there's four divisions and they rotate the division once every 8 years, so they won't be playing a regular season game down here in Arizona until 2026. And who knows what we'll be doing. Maybe we'll still be here. Who knows?
But, maybe we will be here.
Now they play
as residents by then. Right. There are a lot of places to retire around here.
Sun City's right up the road, baby.
I passed the neighborhood today and I saw a whole bunch of people driving around in golf carts as their cars.
When you see more golf carts than automobiles, you're in Arizona.
Right.
You're doing all right. Hey, Alfred, if someday I'm just tooling around in a golf cart, hey, man, sign me up. Something went right.
Just tooling around in a golf cart.
Just tooling around in a golf cart.
I think golf carts got like $600, D-Mac. You sure you want that one?
Sounds good. It means I don't have very important places to go, and I got myself a golf cart.
Even if it's snowing outside.
Why would I be tooling around if it's snowing outside in a golf cart?
You just said if you had a golf cart.
Dude, if I'm tooling around and there's snow outside and I'm on a golf cart, I'm homeless, and you may feel sorry for me. Joe Ellis today through Lindsey Jones, as retweeted by Nikki Javala, said this. We've got to figure out a way to stop talking about how we need to do things differently and actually do things differently. We did it in 2010 on in-season coaching swaps. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm trying to stay focused on one game at a time and see where we go from there, and having conversations with John and see where we go. How do you interpret those comments?
I interpret those comments as realization that it's not gone well. It's not gone well. And I would also interpret it as, this is a situation where we are looking at major changes if things don't get flipped around during this season.
It sounds to me like
major changes.
These changes are, and I felt it last week. Oh, we got to make changes. What were the changes? Tremaine Brock's playing? I mean, what were the changes? You're rotating guards? Those are not major changes.
Here's the big problem, okay? Here's the big problem. The big fix in football is always find a great quarterback. That's your big fix. And if you don't find a great quarterback, and by the way, I have been the proponent of two things that a general manager is responsible for.
Okay.
Finding a head coach.
Right.
Finding a quarterback.
Right.
If those were the only two things that you were able to do as a general manager, job well done.
There's four pillars of success. Ownership, GM, coach, quarterback. And they go in that order. You got to have an owner who's going to hire the right GM, who's going to hire the right coach, who's going to coach the right quarterback. I suppose that could sort of, dovetail out, I suppose.
They're separate because most teams, and this is why.
You got to have all four of those things.
But this is why I was also very blunt and very clear in my delivery. A year and a half ago, when the Broncos were searching for a head coach, and my esteemed friend Vance Joseph was in town, and I was on the airwaves because I didn't want to have a close conversation about what was going on around here. I said I thought if I said it on air, eventually he'd hear it. When I said, "Don't take this job. This is the worst job in the NFL." I say that?
You've said it many times. Why?
Because we didn't have a quarterback of record, and we did not want to go through a growth process with the young quarterback so that he can become the quarterback of our future. We didn't want to do that. We don't want to do the hard things as a Bronco community. We don't want those things because we've been winning all these games for all these years. Go ahead and put it out there. The Broncos haven't had two losing seasons in who knows when.
1972.
Okay. There you go. See, because I know you got it. I know you got it in the back of your
mind.
That's
a hard one to forget.
Okay. So we haven't had two losing seasons since 1972.
Right.
But if you get a rookie quarterback and you insert him in there, you're going to have two seasons probably of losing seasons. Maybe you have one guaranteed, the first one. The first one is a losing season guaranteed, almost a guarantee. I would go 95% chance that it's going to be a losing season. And then next year, you will see growth. We as a Bronco community, Bronco country, we don't want that. We don't want to go through a growing pain with a young quarterback in general. And you know what?
It's are you sure though?
It's reflective on our general manager, John Elway as well. Nobody wants to rebuild. Hey, listen, you know, this organization has been.
John doesn't want to rebuild.
Nobody wants to rebuild, D-Mac. You know what rebuilding means?
All right.
I'm going to have to lose.
So you think the fans just wouldn't accept it?
I don't think our fan base knows how to lose. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. But if you have a young quarterback, you have to go through it, man.
You don't think the Broncos fans would be patient through that process?
I think they'll be, you know what? If we would have drafted a quarterback in the top five last year, Bronco fans would have been happy.
I don't know, Al.
I really do believe
so. You know what? I don't know about that because the reaction draft night about Chubb was overwhelming.
I mean, when you look at you were the one brought up the Disney story in Case Keenum,
yes.
Undrafted.
Yes.
I wasn't thinking about it like that. I was thinking we got a quarterback that won, 11 games last year. I know they went 12-4, but he was a starter in 11 games where they won.
Mm-hmm.
A team that went, all the way to the NFC Championship game.
Right.
I was buying that story. I didn't buy, that it wasn't a legitimate story.
The problem is, in a Disney story, to recognize when's the end of the story. Now, in Disney stories, it always ends on a positive note. You don't get Quentin Tarantino.
That was it, Dan. He should have got $26 million and left the building.
Well, if you're ending the movie, it probably ends with John Elway saying his name properly and then him hugging his wife and saying, honey, we did it.
Case Keenum went on to start 18 games for the Denver Broncos.
With a record of 5-13.
No, it would be 16.
No, but the Disney story the buildup is with the Vikings. The buildup is that pass to Diggs. That was amazing. That was incredible. It had all the drama you could imagine. I mean, that was doing the skull chant because the Saints had left and you had to kick a stupid extra point or whatever you had to do. I mean, that was amazing. You couldn't write that. That's one of those situations. And then it goes to getting this incredible offer from the Broncos and saying, we did it. That's where the story should end. But this isn't life isn't a Disney story. Life marches on whether we like it or not. And so you don't have this in the movie or the miniseries or the Disney story. You don't have the struggles all over again, the failures, the realization that, you really kind of are who you are. You don't do that. The movie The Rookie was great with Dennis Quaid, right? Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
So he's a high school teacher and he had arm injuries and he comes back and he's in his late 30s. And how does that movie end? How does that movie end? That movie ends with him going out and pitching a major league game. And roll the credits, and that's the way the movie ends. If you look at that story in real life, the real life guy, he played for kind of two seasons. It was spotty and never really did anything. I mean, he made it to the majors. But once he got to the majors in real life, he was kind of, meh. He didn't do anything. He was kind of probably disappointing. But let's just stop the movie with him just
kind of like
getting
Invincible,
on the mound.
Right? Like Invincible, where Mark Wahlberg was this
Papali.
Yeah.
Well, Papali did play for 3 years, but
I know. But I mean, same kind of Disney story.
But Papali thing, right? did have a touchdown, and it did happen in his first year against the Giants. But that was it. Right, there wasn't anything. He more or less played special teams.
I have one touchdown.
He played. He more or less played special.
And guess what?
Special teams for 3 years.
Guess who
on
made
bad
the
teams.
Story? Guess who produced the story?
Of Invincible?
Yes.
It's got to be Disney.
Walt Disney.
Because right. only in Disney could a guy shorter than me and Mark Wahlberg be a superstar in the NFL. Vince Papali in real life, Al, was like 6'3". He's like a big dude. And those Eagles teams were terrible. Terrible
teams. Oh, my goodness.
Teams.
Oh, my goodness, man.
So you don't want, you know who's not a Disney story? Like, Von Miller is not a Disney story, right?
You know who else is not a Disney story? I hate to admit it, but Baker Mayfield.
No. It's not a Disney story.
Maybe the Heisman was.
Well, he has,
no.
Here's where he has Disney elements. A walk-on twice.
Hashtag Baker Challenge.
I was waiting
Thank
for
you,
it.
Baker.
Thank you, Baker. That's pretty impressive. A walk-on at Tech and a walk-on at Oklahoma.
Sometimes you got to make them love you.
But once he was established at Oklahoma, it stopped being a Disney story. There's no Disney story about it. The guy was unbelievably successful.
I'm hurt, man. I'm hurt right now.
He was the best quarterback every single place he ever went to evaluate quarterbacks. He was the best in college. He deserved the Heisman. He was the best at the Senior Bowl. He was the best at the Combine, and he's the best in the NFL.
Never back down from showing that he was the best either.
So that's not a Disney. I mean, the walk-on stuff, sure. But the rest of it, no. Case Keenum has been living the ultimate Disney life. Whenever you have to write a book about what you've overcome and you're still playing, that's when you know you're a Disney story. And, you know, to a certain degree, Al, once he got that contract, what was left to motivate Case Keenum?
I don't know. His future is secure. Financially,
dude was playing on 1 year deals, making good money. It's the NFL, but he got like a 5 million% raise from what he was making last year. I mean, I'm not trying to question the guy's heart or motivation, but maybe I guess I am. But you know, man, he's achieved every single dream as soon as he signed his contract. You know who didn't achieve all of his dreams just because he was making money? Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning didn't.
You're right. That's
Peyton Manning
call.
Just wanted to win.
Career earnings so far today, $25 million from Case Keenum, $18 million of that coming this season.
You know what Peyton Manning calls that? A good quarter.
He called that a pay cut.
Right.
He calls that a pay cut.
Right. Peyton Manning makes more in a year, maybe half a year, than Case Keenum would make in his career. So money to Peyton Manning is respect, right?
Right.
It's respect more than I need to make this money, because Peyton Manning is going to make so much more money in endorsements and other ways than his NFL contract. Case Keenum doesn't have any endorsements, Al. He put out, a book that told everybody how awesome it was to be him. And, you know, his other beliefs.
Every backup quarterback hopes that they become Case Keenum.
That's right. He's living a backup quarterback's dream.
Right.
Guess who's not a backup quarterback? Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, too, by the way.
You know who's not a backup quarterback is Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston is not a backup quarterback.
I mean, even though Ryan Fitzmagic has been outstanding for a couple of games.
We need a leader. This is
goes back into the cubby as a backup quarterback.
I'll give Mark Sanchez a little credit. He was never really a backup quarterback. He
didn't present himself like
he
one.
He sure didn't. He sure didn't.
Guys, I'm going to have the passing camp in my place.
That's right.
Come down and hang out with me.
It didn't work out, and in the end he was taking PETs or something and faces a suspension if he ever comes back. But every single time Mark Sanchez stepped on the field, he felt like he was a starter.
We wouldn't feel bad if Case Keenum was our backup quarterback.
That was the Glennon Trubisky doctrine. That's the ultimate. You're right, Al. That's exactly what it should be.
$58 million in career earnings for Ryan Fitzpatrick. $58 million.
Yeah, believe it or not, that guy's a starter. He's not a backup either. It just hasn't really worked out, but the confidence level he's got
is... He's a starter.
He's a starter. He always has been. It's not working out for him, but he's had his moments and a long NFL career, by the way.
14 years, man.
You look at a guy who made... How long has Ryan Fitzpatrick been in the NFL?
14 seasons.
That's a dude from Harvard. Don't tell me that guy doesn't have something special in his DNA. Case Keenum, nice dude, I guess. I'm completely uninspired by Case Keenum. He does nothing for me, but he seems like a nice enough guy. It was a bad plan. Bad plan. And now you...
Are you going to penalize the head coach by firing the head coach because
I wouldn't.
It was a bad plan?
I would not. Now, that doesn't mean...
You've been saying that VJ has to go for some time. What made you change your perspective to say...
Well, I don't think VJ is a great head coach, and I think he'll be better if he gets another opportunity. And by the way, I think he is getting better as time is going on. I don't like Joe Woods. I never liked Joe Woods. I thought he should have gone out with the rest of the trash last year. I've never been into Joe Woods, okay? But that game plan defensively... I know it sounds ridiculous because of the rushing yards. The limiting in that game plan defensively against the Rams gave me hope. Like, that told me, you know what, I think we're on the right track. I think we're realizing who we have. We certainly put Bradley Chubb in a much better position to succeed. Von Miller came out of, you know, the milk carton, right? McVay admitted he almost blew that game, and he did. He had that game 20-3, Al, and that should not have been close. That game should not have been close. The Rams played scared at the end of all of it. Now, it was disappointing that they were able to run the ball so successfully. But like John Elway said, and I think John's right on that, our defense is soft in certain places. And that's mostly because of personnel. I don't think Derek Wolfe is soft. I don't think Brandon Marshall is soft. I think he's hurt, but I don't think he's soft. Bradley Roby should have been cut. At least suspended. Right? I mean, Bradley Roby played every single defensive snap.
Didn't play him well.
Because he had to. They had no depth because you did insane things like sign up Pac-Man Jones instead of develop Brennan Langley, who you drafted. You want to do something smart, cut Pac-Man Jones. Give me a break. Put Brennan Langley up and just say, we drafted you. That was our plan. Let's make it work. Coach him up. Develop these guys. Don't give up on them. But John just has this quick fix mentality, Al, that is just terrible. So Joe...
Well, that's what happens when you go through 5 years of bad drafts.
Five, 6 years of bad drafts.
When you look around and say, well, where is our second rounder from 4 years ago, Cody Latimer? I mean,
he's playing with the Giants. He's playing well. I mean, they're not a good team, but he's playing well.
It's just those guys need to develop into guys that, you know, your first and second and third round
guys.
That's
right.
Those guys got to be your core, the pillars of your team.
Where's Tyler Sobrilo? He was supposed to be our right tackle for 10 years. Where's he?
I don't know.
So when Joe Ellis says today... When he's quoted,
things have to change. You're right.
And he says it can't just be little changes. It's got to be significant. You know, I'm glad you said it, Joe. I like you, Joe. You've got to be the one that does it. You've got to be the one that makes those changes. The significant changes. The changes that really matter. The uncomfortable changes. And, you know, I know Joe is not influenced by who he sits down and has dinner with or who he goes and socializes with. I know he has the best interests of the organization because that's who he's been for many, many years. It's a complicated situation right now.
It's not personal either.
It's complicated because of the Pat Bowlen health situation.
But it shouldn't be personal. I mean, making decisions about, you know what, this is the best thing about being in and around football for all of these years, okay? Even though I stopped playing many years ago, but there is a culture of, hey, man, we just got to find somebody else, a different message. It's not personal. Hey, John Elway and John Fox, hey, they're not seeing eye to eye. It's not personal. We're just going to move in a different direction. You know, John Elway and call it, you know, the way that this thing ended with his, you know, one of his best friends and Gary Kubiak, it's not personal. We just have to move on.
You know? Can I tell you something? Getting the band back together is not the right way to solve the solution.
It did. It worked for a Super Bowl.
Stop.
When you had Peyton Manning.
Stop. That's right. That's right.
It did work for a Super Bowl.
A lot of things work when you got Peyton Manning.
Well, I mean, it didn't work before
Here's
that.
Here's what Peyton Manning
it
did.
It didn't work before that.
Here's what Peyton Manning did. Well, he got damn close. You got
not
there.
Really.
You got to the Super Bowl.
You got there and you got embarrassed.
You got embarrassed, but you got there. Here's what Peyton Manning did. Peyton Manning is pretty amazing. First of all, he was the best player on the field. So let's just start there. He was the...
He was not at Super Bowl.
That's true. Vaughn was the best player on the field, I guess. But for the vast majority of time that Peyton was here, he was the best player on the field.
He was not the best player on the field in Super Bowl 48.
Okay. Let me back up. Peyton Manning, for the time that he was here, for the vast majority of the time, was the best player on the field. We'll start there. He was the best leader as well.
Oh, no question.
Peyton Manning set the tone for everything.
Correct.
Okay? He defined the culture. What's
correct.
The culture of the Denver Broncos? That was asked to Case Keenum this week. He had no answer. Peyton Manning, if anybody was, he wouldn't say it because he'd be too humble to say it. He'd be humble in front of us. But if you told, if he was sipping on a Coors Light, what does he like? Bud Light? Whatever
Bud
he
Light.
Likes. Yeah.
High school Bud Light, he said.
If he was sipping on one of those behind the scenes, I'm sure Peyton would say, I set the tone here. And he's right. And he wouldn't be bragging. He'd be describing. He was the identity of every team he was on. He really was the identity of the Broncos, Al, even when he was injured and not playing well. He still was the identity of that team.
The standard.
He was it. And there might have been some look-at-me moments, you know, having the helmet on, you know, while you're in the pool, icing your ankle, whatever that was.
No, but he could hear the reading.
I got it. Okay. I got it. I got it.
I mean, that's not a huge moment for me.
Peyton Manning practiced the celebration about keeping the ball away from him.
He just wanted to be, you know, he wanted to be choreographed.
There's nothing.
Not just spontaneous about
this guy. He's not spontaneous. But it's okay because his standard of what you needed to do to win was so high, it raised all boats, to rip off a overused John Fox cliche. We don't have
the
that now.
Suez Canal. We're going to call Peyton Manning the Suez Canal.
And you know what? It was a player, not the coach. But John Fox was the perfect guy for him. Gary really wasn't. John was the perfect guy for him because
he got to do the things that he needed to do.
Yeah, it clicked. Koobs is my way. Koobs has, you know, rightfully so. You know, dude dyes his hair in his 50s. He's got a sense of security about himself.
Don't forget now, that relationship was never supposed to happen because Kubiak could have had first dibs on Peyton Manning when he was coaching the Houston Texans in a dome. I say it all the time because Peyton Manning got all those numbers in a dome.
How did they not? In Houston, in the same division.
Matt Schaub. They chose Matt Schaub over Peyton Manning.
Gary Kubiak chose Matt Schaub. Now, they had a good year year before.
Wait a minute. Did Gary Kubiak choose?
Well, who's in charge? Who was in charge of that team?
But did Gary Kubiak choose Case Keenum for this team?
There you go. Who picked out Trevor Siemian?
That was Gary Kubiak.
Who picked out Case Keenum?
We haven't had a whole bunch of conversation about that.
It's a good one. Why is Gary Kubiak here? Here. Not in Texas. Not on the ranch. Here.
A lot of
every
experience.
Day. Why is he here?
Oversee the offense.
How's it gone? So, Joe Ellis, if you want to make change, if you really want, if you mean that, Joe, if you mean it, make some hard decisions. And you know what? At the
it's
end
not
of,
personal, dog.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. It's never personal.
And the Broncos fans, Joe, will back you up. They will. By the way.
5 years, though. 5 years of missing in drafts, dude. That is.
By the way, I did something kind of interesting yesterday.
That's going to come back to bite you at some point.
Have you ever dug into the history of the Denver Broncos?
What do you mean, the history?
Like, how they became. Like. Who is really
the AFL to the NFL?
Do you know the whole story behind the early days and what really happened? It's really cool.
Well, enlighten us when we come back.
I'll do that. Oh,
you got to do the same game now.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing that after the break as well.
Okay. All right.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
Shame.
The Broncos have made it to the desert, and so have we. Live from Arizona, here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Shame.
Doc Taylor.
Huh? Shame.
And I want you to know.
Shame.
Here, dude.
Shame.
I was making some future Arizona players
Shame.
Here today. All right, it was me. You know, I'd have been fine if Kansas Shame. City pulled off the upset, but,
Shame.
But they didn't, so.
I hear you.
I hear you. What do I got to say?
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I guess.
All right, fine, let's do it.
Hey, this is Nancy in Lone Tree. I won King Super's fan football pick'em this week.
Good for
C-Mac,
you.
All right. Repeat after me.
Okay.
After seeing Bradley Chubb last week, I think we made the right choice.
Oh, my God.
The Broncos were right to pick Bradley Chubb.
Oh, my God. Nancy, you're killing me, Nancy.
This is going to live forever.
C-Mac, repeat after me.
I heard you, Nancy.
After seeing Bradley Chubb
All right,
last week,
I
think
it.
We made the right choice.
After seeing Bradley Chubb last week, I think we made the right choice.
The Broncos were right to pick Bradley Chubb.
The Broncos were right to pick Bradley Chubb. I didn't mean any of that.
Shame.
That's the way the shame game works. You are forced to say things you absolutely don't believe in. That's okay. All right. Thank you, Nancy. Congratulations. Can't make that same mistake. Go to 1043thefan.com. That puts me in the running for the big shame game. The walking down the hallways with the shame game. I've been so good, but so bad last week. And by the way, the Zoakley Show won again, right?
Yeah, those guys are on fire, but that's over. Their reign on top is going to be right. shorter
than
the
Why don't we get our act together here, me and you, and finally get some of these?
Well, I mean, I'm going to do it this week. You just got to follow my... Look, just trace my picture, okay?
Okay.
Don't try to draw your own.
You're too funny.
Just trace my picture.
Who owned the Denver Broncos in the beginning? Do you know?
No. Tell me.
It's a guy named Bob Housem. And this goes back to like 1960. The reason why he bought the Denver Broncos was because he was a baseball guy. And he ran the Denver Bears. And they were trying to get a Major League Baseball team. So they basically built Mile High Stadium and they had 35,000 seats. Well, it turns out they didn't get the team. Went other places. And Bob Housman had a problem, Al. How am I going to keep this stadium going? So he got this. Talk about a guy with just some cojones.
Just scrapping.
Yeah, man. So he got together with some people and they formed the AFL, more or less, a competing league with the NFL. He owned the Broncos, Al, for 1 year. He's a baseball guy. He really wasn't a football guy. And in came Gerald Phipps. If people don't know that, they may see that name, Gerald Phipps, on the Ring of Fame. How many times have you seen Gerald Phipps?
Oh, dozens.
Okay, right? So who was Gerald Phipps? Well, he was a businessman too. He was like a construction company guy. He wasn't like a sports guy. He was a construction company guy. And he ended up owning the team for a long time, like 20 years. He eventually sold it to Edgar Kaiser. Now, Kaiser was in this oil and gas thing. He was like a Canadian dude and... Kaiser just had other interests. He wasn't really into sports either. And he only owned the team for a very short period of time, for like 3 years before they sold it to Pat Bowlen. Pat Bowlen loved football. Pat Bowlen was a lawyer, though, Al, who went to Oklahoma, right? He was a businessman. He wasn't he didn't play linebacker. He didn't play quarterback, right? He wasn't a coach. He just really kind of loved football, and he was a lawyer. And Pat Bowlen was 40 years old. and he bought the team. Are you ready for this? For $71 million. A year after John Elway was a quarterback here. Do you know what the Broncos are worth right now?
Yeah. Who was the first guy that owned the team?
Bob Housam. H-O-W-S-A-M.
H-O-W-S-A-M.
He only created the Broncos in the 60s as a way to fill the stadium.
You know what? That guy risked the boat. And his family did.
Kind of. But he was a baseball guy. Yeah, he didn't care about football.
Live right here. I'm looking at on Wikipedia, which is never wrong. He had a golf cart right here in Sun City, Arizona, before he passed away.
That makes sense. He wasn't into football. He only really ran the team for a year. It was just a way to fill up his stadium. My point with all this is now Pat Boland is the one that cashed in. And he had to scrap Al to get that $71 million, mm-hmm. right?
I had to borrow from the family.
That was not easy for him to do, and he did try to sell a portion of the team to John Elway, and Kaiser stopped him from doing it because Pat Boland tried to do an okey-doke.
What did he buy the team?
Who?
Housam.
Housam brought the team here. It's like 1960 was the first year, but like 1959 he put it together.
Okay, so Major League Baseball had an expansion from 16 to 20 teams during the 61-62 season.
Yeah, he was trying to get it and he lost. He lost.
Right. He was born in Denver, though.
So the Denver.
Went to the University of Colorado. He is a Buffalo.
He is a Buffalo.
He's a Buffalo and, of course, a great member of our
the
military.
The reason why the Denver Broncos exist is because we didn't get Major League Baseball. How about that for a little fun fact? I don't know. Maybe they would have come along at some other point. Who knows? But their history is based on failure to get a Major League Baseball team. Which is ironic because the first Rockies game ever was played at Mile High Stadium and is still commemorated with a home plate out there in the parking lot. That all being said, this has been and Pat Boland's the one that cashed in the most. So things have been changing throughout the course of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that it really has the biggest legacy of all everybody in Denver Broncos history is really John Elway. Because John Elway was there before Pat Boland. Just 1 year, but it was 1 year before Pat Boland. And John Elway's legacy has grown even past, sadly, I wish it wasn't the case, but sadly past the time of Pat Boland in terms of running things. John Elway, Alfred, stretches so many generations for the Denver Broncos. So, I mean, I get it.
We're talking about four, at least. We're talking about four generations.
I get the loyalty, right? Like, if you're going to trust anybody for the best interests of the Denver Broncos, it's John Elway. I mean, look at what this dude has meant to the team. He is everything.
He's excellence personified.
But at what point, this is the big question, at what point, with all the recognition in the world of how important he is, at what point, Alfred, do you just say, we got to move on? You know,
I think that happens when you lose focus and you don't have a winning product and you don't have a strategy that nets you a winning strategy. I think the winning strategy is, okay, You know, people are fired for far less things than what John Elway has done in the NFL draft. But I would say that you came in, you said these are the things that you wanted to do if you got the job as the GM for the Broncos. If you put up there at number one, win a Super Bowl, job well done.
I got you.
Hold on.
All right.
Hold on. If you put up there at number one, win a Super Bowl, job well done. If you put up there, get to the Super Bowl, job well done.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any of those things talked about really what we should have been talking about, developing a winning culture with a young quarterback. Now, that would have taken a lot of guts to say, and you would have probably been ridiculed until you found your guy. But finding Peyton Manning is a quick fix.
Right.
It's a great quick fix.
Right.
But you know you got a window for that. And
you realize that story, too, was an off-the-hip thing. Do you remember how that story came? It was just like John having like a brainstorm and throwing it out to Fox. What about going and saying to Joe Ellis, what about Peyton Manning? It wasn't some sort of philosophical plan, right? The story is kind of funny. You know, just it's like one day, just a brainstorm in the office. You know, what about Peyton Manning? And everybody was like, ah, sounds good. That's not, let's get a young quarterback and develop him for 15 years, right?
Right.
That's like,
nobody wants to do that.
That's like, I can't stand Tebow. I can't believe what just happened.
And we're getting rid of Tebow.
And by
item number one was, at the end of the year, get rid of Tim Tebow.
No matter what.
Tebow's out.
No matter what.
Tebow's out.
John Elway was not going to start the next year with Tim Tebow.
And you know what? I don't think we can get Peyton Manning unless Peyton Manning see what Tim Tebow did with the Denver Broncos. Because when you complete two passes in a game, you know your defense and your run game must be really good.
But where should have Peyton Manning ended up?
He probably should have ended up in Houston.
Of course.
Who had a defense that was built to win.
Inside.
Indoors, in a dome.
In a division he knows like the back of his hand.
Yes,
hands.
Dude.
That's just a short drive. Short drive from where he grew up.
Right. That's where he should have ended up playing.
And he didn't.
But you know what? Those kind of quirky things kind of happen all the time around sports. You know, like the story. Like, who would ever not draft Kobe Bryant with the first pick in the draft?
I'm just saying here, Al, for Joe Ellis, and I'm having a little bit more sympathy here because I'm realizing what's really at stake here.
You're saying fire John Elway.
Yeah. And that is just like mind-blowingly hard
to
do.
It's not personal if it happened.
I know. But how
if it does happen, D-Mac, it's not personal.
No, it's not.
You know, but my friend, the general manager for the Denver Broncos, has delivered. If his goals were to go to the Super Bowl and go to the Super Bowl and win,
I think John's delivered more than anybody.
But so what is the goal
right now?
Believe me, I'm not done swinging and missing.
Right. What is the goal?
You know, and John said kind of flippantly to me, you know, I'll know everything and then I'll do your job.
What's the goal?
You know what I'll tell you?
D-Mac, what's the goal?
Win. Now?
Just to win, to get 9-7?
I think what the goal...
9-7 is winning.
Can I be honest with you?
Is that what you want?
I think the goal was to prove that it wasn't all about Peyton Manning.
Oh, no, that's not what the goal should be. The goal should be to find another Peyton Manning.
I think the goal was to prove it wasn't all Peyton Manning, and I think my...
Find another
my opinion,
Peyton Manning.
In my opinion...
This time we want him to be a rookie.
I don't think John has ever forgot about the time that Pat Bowlen offered him ownership in the team. Do you know what Pat Bowlen's... I looked this up. Do you know what Pat Bowlen, according to Wikipedia, do you know what Pat Bowlen's net worth is?
It's got to be like $4 billion, $3 billion.
It's $1 billion.
It's got to be more than that.
According to Wikipedia, it's $1 billion.
Team is worth more than that.
Do you know what John Elway's value is?
Wikipedia said the team is worth $1 billion?
No. His Pat Bowlen's personal wealth.
Net worth?
Net worth, yes. Do you know what John Elway's net worth was, according to Wikipedia?
$100 million?
Yeah, $157, which is great. But it's not a billion.
He can get a house in Sun City and ride around in the golf cart, too.
Right. So another big question is, what is the motivation here? What is the goal here? What is going on here? We got to take a break. If Joe Ellis is serious about his comments today, that's...
I think you just have to ask John Elway,
that's where it's going.
What are we doing here? We need to develop. We got to take the long and hard road and develop a young player.
I think it's a little bit
I'm sorry, but that's the only way it's going to happen. And Bronco fans, y'all got to be with me on this, man. Right, it's going to be painful for a little while.
Let's take a break. This is the Drive on the Fence.
The Broncos have made it to the desert, and so have we. Live from Arizona, here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Pick of Destiny was released. It was a bomb. And all the critics said that the D
that's why you hear things like getting it in.
The sun had set and the chapter had closed. But one thing no one thought about was the G would arrive.
I know, we got a little new setup here. This is what I used to do, by the way. I used to drive the Starship Enterprise right here.
Oh, I love the ideas of that guy sitting back there. You know, the was it Venus flytrap?
Oh, I love Venus flytrap.
That was a great radio station. They played rock and roll in the morning and soul music at night. And in the middle of the day, they did Hog Reports with Les Nessman. I mean, who couldn't sell that station?
Of course, man.
And it's all in Cincinnati. I mean, sounds like a winning combination to me.
I mean, when you think about that show, though, I mean, for those of us that remember that show.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah. Great format.
I didn't know where Cincinnati was when I was watching the show and didn't take time to pull out my globe and my map to find it because there was no computer back then or my encyclopedia.
Growing up, you had no idea where Cincinnati was.
Nobody knew. Did you know?
I did not. I grew up in Boston. I it was like the furthest place. I had no clue what Ohio was.
Right. Nobody.
I probably didn't even know that Cincinnati was in Ohio when
right.
I was growing up.
No doubt.
I just liked it because it was a radio station.
To Cincinnati.
I can't even imagine.
I was like, on the day that I was drafted, I'm like,
dude,
where is Cincinnati in the world?
Especially because Mike Kroll went to the Broncos. I mean, it's like the coolest.
No, I could have been okay going to the 49ers or the Miami Dolphins.
Who took a linebacker after how many linebackers
Steelers
were taken
from
you?
Pittsburgh Steelers took a guy right after me.
After you, though.
Yeah.
I
think maybe he went before me. I don't know. Huey Richardson.
I don't know, man. I think we've had this conversation before, and
but the bottom line is...
Huey was before you.
Huey went right before me.
To where?
To the Steelers.
Oh,
see,
okay.
I could have been a Steeler and been okay. Everybody knows.
Pittsburgh. That was pick 15.
That was pick 15. I went, I think, 18.
You could have been a Steeler.
You were the third... Well, you were a defensive end out of college, is what it's saying.
Wow, you could have been
a linebacker. I won the Buckus Award.
You would have been a great Steeler. You and Chad Brown?
Maybe I could have had a Hall of Fame career there.
Probably.
I really should have had a Hall of Fame career here in Denver because you know how you get to the Hall of Fame? Get on TV a bunch and make a lot of plays.
All right, we got to roll. Are you ready for tomorrow?
I am ready, man.
It's a big game, and people should be excited about it. And we're here in Arizona to cover it top to bottom no matter what happens.
By the way, Huey Richardson, we went on an All-American trip together to go meet Bob Hope. And the whole time, the guy had this superstition where he couldn't look into the camera. So every picture that you see of Huey Richardson is him looking away from the camera.
That's
for
awesome.
My partner, D-Mac.
That's awesome.
For Big Sexy, the man behind the glass.
I'm going to drink a lot of Budweiser tonight, Tracy. I promise you that.
There you go.
And, of course, Barry the Strawberry Man. I miss you guys in Denver, but we're here for business for the Broncos tomorrow. We'll be there. We'll be there for you tomorrow for the pregame lead right up into the game against the Arizona Cardinals.
There it is. I love it.
Have a good night, everybody.